some days in the United States. They took seriously the element of time. Once they saw that this pandemic was happening, they put all elements of state power together to stamp it out. And the United States simply has not done that. We have not taken advantage of the time and the resources we have. We're going into getting booster shots for vaccines, and we haven't really done everything that we could do with the first round of vaccines to keep this pandemic from playing out in ways that it doesn't have to.
Stephen Thrasher, we want to thank you for being with us, professor at the MacDill School of Journalism, Northwestern University. We'll link to your new piece just out in Scientific American, headlined "Why COVID Deaths Have Surpassed AIDS Deaths in the U.S. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Vois la ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emportés par la foule qui nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre, nous ne formons qu'un seul corps.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
It's in the streets, it's in the streets. It's in the streets, it's in the streets.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon lawmakers will join a special session to try to protect renters from eviction. Portland pays out two people who were injured by police use of excessive force, and the Supreme Court considers a restrictive Mississippi abortion law. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 1st, 2021. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Althea Billings. Governor Kate Brown has called a special session of the state legislature to address renter protections. They'll meet starting on December 13th, and their agenda is pretty long. Brown says she wants legislators to approve state funding for rental assistance and extend eviction protections in the pandemic. Government funding for rental relief has been given to 22,000 Oregonians, about $150 million, but 25,000 more have applied. Even people who've been approved are waiting on their funding to come, and officials say they don't know when they'll get through the backlog of Oregonians applying for relief. At this session, Brown has proposed that the state should extend protections for renters who have applied for help. She also proposed that landlords should be paid fully what they're owed, plus $90 million to be given to low-income tenants through the winter. As is, the state doesn't have the funds to help every renter who has applied, so Governor Brown has looked to the federal government for help. Oregon isn't the only state to have problems with delays to getting people their rent assistance. Texas, California, and New York have all had trouble getting money to those who need it as well. The State Senate and State House Majority Leaders Rob Wagner and Barbara Smith emphasized their commitment to protect people from eviction. They said in a statement, quote, "We can take action in a special session to ensure this doesn't happen and that we keep our promises to Oregonians. No one should lose their housing because of administrative delays," end quote. The Portland City Council voted to approve two injury settlements for people hurt by Portland police. The council first voted in favor of a $25,000 settlement for Deja Beck for bodily injury from Portland police on September 28, 2020. They also voted to settle a bodily injury claim with Aaron Cantu for $125,000. Cantu sued Portland police for using excessive force on August 4, 2018. Cantu was struck in the back of the head with a flashbang grenade thrown by Portland police and says he suffered a traumatic brain injury as a result. Both of these settlements come out of the city's insurance and claims fund. The Supreme Court is hearing a case on a Mississippi abortion law that experts fear could spell the end of the right to an abortion, as set out by Roe v. Wade. KBOO's Josh Salem has the details.
The Supreme Court is hearing arguments in a case that could overturn the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade ruling, as well as a 1992 ruling, Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which affirmed Roe. For almost five decades, the court has held that states cannot ban abortions before fetal viability, usually at 24 weeks. Mississippi passed a law banning abortions after 15 weeks, which challenges that precedent. The state did so, even though only about 100 women per year get abortions after 15 weeks. Mississippi has one abortion clinic, Jackson Women's Health Organization. The state of Mississippi is arguing viability is an arbitrary standard that does not take a state's interest in regulating abortions into account. Mississippi also says the technology has moved viability up significantly from 24 weeks. There are several possible ramifications related to the current Mississippi case before the court. The justices could simply uphold the Mississippi law and say nothing more. But abortion rights supporters say erasing viability as the line between when abortion may or may not be banned would overturn the landmark Roe decision, even if the court does not explicitly do that. The Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which protects a pregnant woman's right to choose whether or not to have an abortion, actually does so through a right to privacy. Since the right to an abortion is rooted to the 14th Amendment, which says states cannot deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without that due process, same-sex marriage and other rights based on that provision could also be threatened if Roe and Casey are successfully challenged. In general, the Supreme Court does not easily overturn past decisions. This is done intentionally because it prevents citizens from thinking those decisions are based on politics and not law, and that the court's rulings could go back and forth repeatedly as its membership changes. Justices considering overturning a previous ruling usually do so when that ruling was not simply wrong, but was egregiously so. Mississippi has argued in court filings both Roe and Casey fit that description. The state said, quote, "The conclusion abortion is a constitutional right has no basis in text, structure, history, or tradition," end quote. Only one justice, Clarence Thomas, has openly called for Roe v. Wade to be overturned. The court currently appears to have a 6-3 conservative majority, with three appointees being named by former President Trump. Trump explicitly said he would appoint justices who oppose abortion rights. Justice Brett Kavanaugh said in his confirmation hearing, however, that he considered Roe to be established case law, which earned him the crucial support of Senator Susan Collins. 1 month ago, the court heard arguments regarding a Texas law that effectively bans abortions after around 6 weeks of pregnancy. The Supreme Court has not ruled on the case, but did not put the law on hold while the motion is being reviewed. A decision in the Mississippi case is expected by late June. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
From voting restrictions to high-profile Supreme Court cases, pro-democracy watchdogs are worried that boundaries are being crossed when it comes to the expectations of how government works. Their observation? That many people could use a civics lesson. Mike Mullen has more.
The U.S. Supreme Court today takes up arguments in a high-stakes abortion case. It coincides with divisive arguments over voter fraud, mask mandates, and school curriculum. Recent findings suggest many Americans could use some more civics knowledge as they debate these issues. This fall, the Annenberg Public Policy Center released its annual survey of overall public smarts about the branches of government. Adults who correctly named all three branches increased to 56%, the highest since the survey began in 2006. But the center's Kathleen Hall Jamieson calls this woefully inadequate.
If one doesn't understand that there are three branches, doesn't understand the protections guaranteed by the First Amendment, that lack of knowledge increases the likelihood that when asked whether someone thinks that if the Supreme Court issues unpopular rulings, it might be best to get rid of the Supreme Court, a person is more likely to say yes.
Some of the divisive issues in the scope of government and constitutional protections have surfaced in North Dakota. This includes the state taking part in a lawsuit to overturn a workplace vaccine requirement for COVID-19. Mask mandate debates also surfaced at many school board meetings across the state this fall. While there's been more conversation about boosting civics education in schools, Jamieson feels the responsibility lies with the public in general to learn more. She adds foundational knowledge of government is always important, but must be stressed in times like these.
In an environment in which the branches are under stress, it becomes more important, not less, that the public understand why the founders set up the structure that we have.
She says the news media can help by including this information when reporting on legislation or other matters related to government. The survey revealed 61% of Americans incorrectly believe that under the First Amendment, Facebook is required to allow all people to express themselves freely on the platform. And just one in three people surveyed knew the correct lengths of terms for federal lawmakers. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service.
The Portland Public School Board and the Portland Association of Teachers agree changes need to be made because of COVID-related pressures on teachers and students. They disagree, however, on what those changes should be. One of the union's proposals, having one day a week where all learning is virtual and teachers get a half day for lesson preparation, has been rejected by the school board. PPS Deputy Superintendent Sean Byrd said in a statement, quote, "While we share the urgency to address issues impacting our educators' experience this school year, we do not believe that dramatically reducing in-person learning for students is in the best interest of our students, their families, and our community," end quote. Social media response from the parents of students has been strongly against the union's idea. The district's own proposal for grades 6 through 12 is for 3 days with modified schedules in January, February, and March, which would allow time in the morning for students to focus on social-emotional learning and training for staff in the afternoon. Recently, Reynolds Middle School went back to virtual learning for 3 weeks because of problems with student stress and behavior. The federal government is set to end its moratorium on collection of student loan payments in February. Many borrowers are uncertain of how they can pay after the 2 years of relief. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story from Montana.
Student loan borrowers have had a reprieve from making payments during the pandemic, but that's set to end in 2022. Starting in February, the pause on federal student loan payments will be lifted for the first time since the pandemic began in March 2020. Greg Harper is a financial capabilities counselor with Rural Dynamics, a Great Falls-based financial nonprofit. He has a plan of action for anyone with student debt.
I recommend that they reach out to their loan servicer online or by phone to discuss options right away. Find out what payment that they will be responsible for and when will it be due. So first of all, I don't want them caught off guard.
Nearly 9 in 10 fully employed student loan borrowers say they don't feel financially secure enough to start paying off their loans again, according to the Student Debt Crisis Center. An estimated 100,000 Montana borrowers owe an average of about $30,000, both in federal and private loans. Harper breaks down how much of someone's budget should go towards student loan debt.
Debt service minimum payments combined should be no more than about 15% of your net spendable income.
Harper adds each person's plan for tackling student loans should be based on their individual circumstances.
That's the big question, right? It's not a black and white issue. So it really is to cater to their specific situation, make the proper recommendations based on that.
For Big Sky Connection, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to an end of year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for a listen in to Oregon Planned Parenthood's reaction to the Supreme Court challenge to Roe v. Wade. Stick around for Rhythm Nation with Peter Marks at 6, and then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 50 degrees, and tomorrow it will be mostly cloudy with a high of 52. Today in 1988, the United Nations proclaimed World AIDS Day, dedicated to raising awareness about those killed by the disease. The quote of the day comes from civil rights icon Rosa Parks, since today is Rosa Parks Day, as celebrated by Oregon and Ohio, since December 1st is the day she was arrested. Parks said, quote, "You must never be fearful about what you are doing when it is right." Time is wearing down as Republicans push towards a government shutdown over the debt limit, and an FDA panel gives the okay to the first pill to treat COVID-19. For more on those and other stories, we go to Nadia Ramlagan with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
First, let me assure everyone the government will not default, as it never has. And second, Majority Leader and I have been having discussions about the way forward.
Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell on raising the debt limit and avoiding a government shutdown. He and former Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin discussed the nation's borrowing limit in a meeting on Tuesday as an impasse over the debt limit drags on. Congress has until December 15th to act. A gunman opened fire at a Michigan high school on Tuesday, killing 3 students and wounding 8 other people, including at least 1 teacher. Law enforcement arrested a 15-year-old sophomore within minutes of arriving at the school in Oxford Township. President Joe Biden has signed 4 bills related to benefits for veterans. The bills address disparities, continuation of service and tuition for survivors, as well as a proposal to help mothers who have served.
We've heard from veterans of color who, upon returning home from their service, are treated differently from white veterans. This bill will help us understand how this happened, keep better records, expose the facts to the light of day.
Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell acknowledged Tuesday that he now expects high inflation to continue into the middle of 2022. He said the government should no longer push what had been a reoccurring slogan of higher prices being transitory.
It's difficult to predict the persistence and effects of supply constraints, but it now appears that factors pushing inflation upward will linger.
Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar held a news conference on Tuesday addressing recent anti-Muslim comments made by Colorado Congresswoman Lauren Boebert that suggested Omar was a terrorist. Omar is one of 3 Muslim representatives in Congress.
It is not just attack on me, but on millions of American Muslims across this country.
Consumer advocates testified Tuesday before a Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Product Safety over the holiday season. Consumer watchdog associate at U.S. PIRG Hannah Rhodes on how online retailers can prevent the sale of counterfeit items and product recalls.
For hosting sites, they should make sure that they are reviewing for recalling products. But for recalling companies, there needs to be more accountability in the system.
A panel of experts advising the FDA has voted in favor of emergency use authorization of an antiviral pill from Merck and Ridgeback Biotherapeutics to treat COVID-19. If the agency authorizes use of the drug, it would be the first oral antiviral treatment for the coronavirus that could be taken at home. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Republicans in government continue to challenge the Biden administration's actions to curb the COVID pandemic. A group of congressional Republicans is threatening to shut down the government this week unless they cut all funding for the enforcement of President Biden's large employer coronavirus vaccine mandate. Biden's mandate has been temporarily blocked by a federal appeals court. Republican senators are threatening to drag out consideration of the short-term funding bill through Friday, when the federal government would need to shut down if funding is not approved. On the state level, Iowa, Tennessee, Florida, and Kansas have changed their rules on unemployment to include people who have been fired or who have left their jobs because of their employers' vaccine policies. There are 30 other states with Republican-led legislatures that could look to do the same. On the other hand, several Democratic states have ruled that leaving a job because of a vaccine mandate will disqualify former employees from unemployment benefits unless they have a demonstrated exemption. Unemployment benefits are governed partly by federal law, but states have the flexibility to set their own requirements and restrictions. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is moving to require all foreign air travelers entering the country to show a negative COVID-19 test performed within 1 day of departure. Currently, vaccinated international travelers can use a negative test result done within 3 days of departure. The new 1 day testing requirement would also apply to U.S. citizens flying into the country. The administration is also considering whether to require air travelers to get another COVID-19 test within 3 to 5 days after arrival in the United States. The CDC now lists nearly 80 foreign destinations as having level 4, its highest level of COVID-19 transmission, and discourages Americans from traveling there. The World Health Organization said today that the Omicron variant has been confirmed in at least 23 countries. The first case of the Omicron variant has been detected in the United States. The new variant won't be fully understood for a few weeks, but experts believe it is more contagious than the Delta variant, which had a major impact on U.S. cases in August and September. Booster vaccination shots are thought to be the best defense against the new variant since they bump immunity back up to first vaccination levels. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael's going cuckoo for COVID shots.
Omicron? Oh my God, more masks, don't ask. Should I get this booster or wait for the next one just around the corner? Is the world heading for another lockdown? Is it just coincidence that variants start in places not getting vaccines? Surely the possibility of continuing windfalls would not cause Big Pharma to exaggerate. Good thing I'm not paranoid, or I think how convenient that this virus has been a huge boost to billionaires and their companies. The price of shipping a container from Asia jumped eightfold since 2019. COVID separated and suspicioned us from each other. Let's get uniforms with stripes on our shoulders to show how many shots we got. We're addicted to Zoom, binge-watching, and go-boxed food. My street's unsafe with wandering delivery trucks. With all the buying we've been doing, Christmas shopping seems redundant. The pandemic is reaching the terrible twos a bit too early, while red state ICUs continue to burgeon with patriots who trust politics more than science. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Navajo officials are monitoring the Omicron variant and urging citizens to continue their COVID-19 precautions. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Navajo Nation leaders and healthcare officials are urging Navajo citizens to continue to take COVID-19 precautions as concerns over the spread of the Omicron variant grows around the world. Navajo leaders and public health officials in a virtual town hall Tuesday asked Navajo citizens to be careful and to protect their families and others by getting vaccinated and to continue to wear masks in public. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez.
We want to make sure that we are all prepared. We warrior up as we go into the holiday, the Christmas season, the New Year's holidays here. And it's upon all of us. It's not all upon government. It's not upon Washington, D.C. It's upon you.
Navajo health officials say they're currently addressing the Delta variant while monitoring Omicron as part of the tribe's public health response to COVID-19. Internal medicine specialist Dr. Vaugh.
Working in a collaborative effort, we've already made Omicron a priority to be able to pick up and detect should it be here in Navajo Nation. As of now, none of the samples have come back positive for Omicron. It's still very much Delta. We are monitoring this, and we have the tools and systems in place to do so, and that are actively doing so right now.
Health officials say Omicron has an unusual combination of mutations and is quite different than the Delta and other variants. It's causing disease in people who have recovered from Delta. According to the World Health Organization, Omicron is spreading in South Africa and is expected to be detected around the world. U.S. officials are preparing for its arrival. The Dr. Phil television show Tuesday focused on missing and murdered Indigenous women, including the 2018 case of Henny Scott in Montana. The 14-year-old went missing and her body was found on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation weeks after she was last seen. Her parents, Paula and Nate, talked about their painful experience and the lack of answers and attention Henny's case received from law enforcement.
Do you think it would be different if somebody in a neighboring town with a blonde-haired, blue-eyed child that was missing, do you think they would respond differently than they did with you?
Probably because they got more resources, resources off the reservation, to where, like, off the reservation, you see somebody, go missing, and they got an Amber Alert right away.
Helicopters and the maybe more cops there and dogs even.
The show also featured the case of Ashley Loring, who went missing 4 years ago. She was last seen on the Blackfeet Reservation. Her family says there are still no answers. A national voter registration document is being made available for the first time in Yupik, Navajo, and Apache. KSJD's Sophia Stewart Rossi has more.
The National Mail Voter Registration Form is used by U.S. citizens to register to vote and update their voter information. And for the first time, the form will soon be available in Indigenous American languages. The U.S. Election Assistance Commission is providing the registration form in three languages. This will be the Commission's first dedicated expansion effort to serve Native American communities. Also, for the first time, the Commission is providing audio translations of the form for spoken languages. Previously, the National Voter Registration Form has been available in English and many international languages. I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Chemeketa Community College is making an effort to inspire Hispanic students to explore careers in agriculture and technology, two fields that are now closely related. The project has received a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
A new project with a grant from the federal government aims to invite Hispanic students in Oregon into agriculture and technology careers. Chemeketa Community College in the Willamette Valley has received a grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The project will provide tuition waivers and paid internships for high school students and place 12 agriculture science students from the college as mentors in local high schools. Tim Ray is Dean of Agriculture Science and Technology at Chemeketa. He wants to fight the misconception that farm-related work is only done in the fields.
It's really training folks around how to manage agricultural enterprises and work with all of the technology that is included in producing the food, fiber, and fuel that runs the world.
He says there are science-based jobs in agriculture, as well as opportunities in marketing and even finance. The grant will direct nearly $275,000 to Chemeketa. Ray says the college is working hard to offer courses, especially on the non-credit side, in multiple languages.
That's important to us, to eliminate that language barrier as much as possible. We try to have bilingual staff in the building.
The USDA has been selecting projects from Hispanic-serving institutions of higher education, including Chemeketa, to fund through grants. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, David Rosenberg, Dan Raphael, and Claire Rosciato. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Mike Moen, Eric Tegedoff, and Nadia Ramlagan. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kbu.fm/give or text KBU to 44321.
KBU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
We need all lawmakers at all levels of government to ensure that the right to choose abortion is upheld for all who seek that choice. We choose life, life with choice. Choice about giving birth or not. Choice of one's conscience. We choose the right to decide about pregnancy because lives are at stake.
I believe in abortion on demand and without apology.
The reality is that abortion has always been available, and it will remain available even if Roe is overturned for the affluent.
Today, as the U.S. Supreme Court